9:00. My name is Bob Adair. We'll call to order the Tax Relief for Pollution Control Property Advisory Committee. And we'll just call the roll. Rob Castor told me he's something came up, so he's not available. Paul Kuhn is here. Greg Maxim, are you on the phone, Greg? No, okay. And Mike Nassie's here. Mike Ford's on the phone. Roland Bieber. Wayne Frizzell said he had to attend a funeral. Lloyd is here. Don is not here yet, but he's coming, right?
No, he's asked for an excused absence. He has a minor family medical issue.
Okay, all right. So, and Bennett is here, Cyrus. Charles Allred, are you on? Okay, there's one other. He must be a guest listening in. So, we do have a quorum. So, I will... to clarify for the record, we've got absence, Rob Castor, Greg Maxim, Roland Bieber, Wayne Frizzell, Don Lee, and Charles Allred. So, we'll go ahead and go forward with the agenda items. And for the record, and I say this every time, it's because we want input from the public or want to have ample opportunity for the public to weigh in on the various issues on our agenda or anything else that's not on our agenda. There's time for that, too. But the policy basically is we welcome comments and feel free to come to the podium anytime, and we'll recognize you for a reasonable time. We've been able to use that reasonable standard. I'm not going to put a clock on you for a certain few minutes unless that gets really out of hand, which I don't anticipate that. And that's it. So do we have any general comments from the committee before we get started? All right. This item two, I think, will be relatively short, not to limit you, but just thought I'd let you give a legislative overview for the record. Ron Hallett. Do you have it turned on?
Yeah, I turned it on. Rob.
It was muted from the back.
All right.
Hi. Good morning. Ron Hallett with the TCEQ. From a legislative standpoint, none of the bills that had filed passed, so there really isn't an update. There's nothing that impacted us as the TCEQ. The landfill bill passed, but that wasn't something that impacts us.
So in terms of the landfill bill, which exempts property tax from projects that capture methane at landfills, do they have to go through some sort of check with you guys to make sure they're actually, or it's just goes directly to the
it goes
to the county?
Good morning.
To the chief appraiser's office.
This is Charles Allred.
Hey, Charles, thanks for calling in. And just a reminder for everybody on the phone, do not put it on hold if you'll put it on mute until you're ready to speak. Thanks.
So in other words, I'm sorry.
Greg just called in. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Thanks for calling,
I'll
Greg.
I'll do the same.
So in other words, there's no staff time required of TCEQ to do a check on whether the methane capture equipment is actually pollution control equipment or any of that?
Correct. There's nothing that TCEQ does. I believe the bill that was passed does require the comptroller's office, though, to adopt rules that identifies the property that's eligible.
Okay. Any other questions about legislative matters? All right. I just want to go on record. I think most of us are aware that nothing actually passed. But just want to review that. So while you're there, there's no rulemaking, as far as we know at this point, related to 1131?
No, there's no rulemaking scheduled right now. I need to check the dates, but I believe we have to do our three-year review sometime starting next year, 2016. But that will only require rulemaking if we decide to make a change to either the Tier 1 table or the expedited review list. If we're not making a change, we don't have to do anything. accept, conduct the review.
All right. Okay, thanks. All right, we'll go to item three. If I suppose, Ron, you're going to be the speaker for this, too?
Yeah.
Process for applications.
Okay. It's that time again. Every 2 years, half this committee or thereabouts has to be renominated. Remember, we set it up as a four-year term. Seven one time and six the other do the renominations. We're in the middle of the process. The applications are posted on the Internet. You have until September 15th to file your applications or for other people to file applications for the positions. Once we receive the applications, we put together a memo with the applications, provide that to the executive director. The executive director then makes his recommendations on who to put on the committee. And then those recommendations show up on an agenda in December before the commissioners, and they're the ones who decide who's going to be on the committee.
So a decision should be made in December?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And we do it in December because that way, if you have a January meeting, the new people will be on it.
Okay.
Chairman, yes. You have a list. Can you remind us who's normally roll off?
Paul Coons, Don Lee, Lloyd Graham, Greg Maxim, Mike Nassy, and Cyrus.
Would come off?
Come off this year. Which breaks out to the one school district, one environmental group, one taxing unit, and three industry reps. And we've seen two applications so far, and that's it. But the last time through, most of the applications came in the last day.
Well, you're not out of time as long as you have left.
Can I put that down? What was that day so I can put it on my Google Calendar?
September 15th.
Okay.
And the last time we actually did call a couple of people and remind them that they kept saying they were sending it, but it hadn't shown up yet.
Hey, this is Mike Ford. Curious, I'm sure you said this, I just didn't hear. So even if you're just up for renewal, you still need to send in an application?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Yeah, just to clarify, you may be renewed, I guess, or reappointed, but you still have to apply as if it's first time,
right,
like everybody else.
You do have to apply because everybody else would have to apply.
Right. Okay. Good. Thanks for that reminder. And the website probably has the means in which you submit the application.
Yes, it does.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Thanks, Ron. All right. We'll get to the main item of the committee. You'll see that's in addition to the agenda that was passed out, something that we discussed back in March. And on my item, which is not on the list passed out, I have crossed out 1A and 2 because we excluded that on the agenda. And 2 is crossed out because we had we decided that in April. We had some advice that we submitted to the TCEQ. And it's my understanding, Ron, and you might can clarify this, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but our advice was accepted by TCEQ. It's on the website, but there have been no decisions as to whether to take that into a rulemaking or anything to that effect, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. So that's why it's at least on mine, I've got it scratched off, and it's on the agenda. Excludes that item also. And 1A, we just thought we'd save that for another day because that could be a longer conversation. But if I can help narrow this, and this is just my suggestion, and I'm just one member, but 1D seems to be, at least in my opinion, more of a common sense thing, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it. And there are examples. And the example, Rob Castor is one that's brought up more of these examples. I believe it's number 4 is one example to where there's a regulation that's been promulgated, and then for whatever reason, it's no longer in effect. So basically, you are meeting the standard, or the meeting a rule or regulation, then all of a sudden, because they pulled it back, you're exceeding the rule or regulation because it's not there anymore. So that's basically what's happening. I'll open it up for discussion.
Or maybe Chairman saying another way, there might not even be a regulation.
Correct, yes.
The agency concluded that there was still a regulatory requirement that could be used that you could say you were exceeding. I'm sure it wouldn't present that much more of a difficult question for them, but it becomes a difficult question for them, in fact, if there is no regulation remaining, right?
Right.
That's
And let me say that the intent of this, as I understand it, is not a broad expansion of the Prop 2 program or anything like that. So there's nothing, there's no agenda behind this.
Right. I mean, Robert raised the question because Freescale, in fact, encountered that where they installed some things when the GHG permitting regime was heading their way, and then after the UARG decision and the elimination of what was really the tailoring rule driven de minimis levels, they no longer had a permit driver, or I mean a regulatory driver. So that was one example where you have a regime that was passed, there wouldn't have otherwise been a regulatory driver for the project. And when it disappears because a court invalidates it, during that window of whether the agency re-ups it.
It could be someone on the line that's doing something. I don't know what they're doing.
So that's the fact situation that Robert teed up, that and the reason that it was included as 1D on the list. There's a couple of other examples you can think of out there in the world right now. I mean, Mercury Rule is one of them that may or may not survive. Not that it's, you know, an everyday occurrence that EPA proposes or finalizes an illegal environmental rule. Cyrus and I agree and disagree about which ones are illegal and which ones aren't. But it is part of the practice, the potential of the future that we'll have installations that will be done because a rule is finalized that will at the same time be legally contested. And although the D.C. Circuit has often remanded rules without vacating them, there are examples where they have, and may be some more. So I would add to Robert's suggestion about 1D that I think it is relevant. It's probably not going to happen all that much, but it will happen where the equipment to be installed could be quite significant. In the mercury context, you might have mercury controls that you would not have installed but for the rule. They may even threaten retirement of the unit, but if the rule is remanded and ultimately doesn't come back with the same requirement, you know, it'd be good to know how the commission was going to deal with applications that for equipment that was installed when the reg was legal.
Yeah, and just as a reminder, I ask, is this more theoretical, or how common is this? And apparently there are enough examples to...
Well, I mean, Robert's example is the most obvious, and he's not on the phone, so he can't, you know, expand on it. But, you know, I know from just quick discussions with Ron that it's been something that's come up historically, but there actually has been a fallback regulation still in place. Right, Ron?
So... Mike, even on the mercury example, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but already a permit for a coal plant is going to have some sort of mercury limit on it. So couldn't you still fall back on, we're just exceeding the permit limits by putting this, wouldn't you kind of be covered anyway?
You certainly would have that argument. It's the kind of thing that we would want to hammer out and explain. I think the trickier thing is going to be new pollutants, right?
And I think the statute calls for something that was acquired to meet a rule regulation, and the fact that it's no longer there doesn't mean you're not meeting the statute.
Right. Does this anticipate that the rule was in place at one time, then got repealed?
Absolutely.
Or would it also... It wouldn't cover situations where you, like under B, where you thought the rule might be coming,
right,
and then it never came at all.
Yeah, okay. Different question, and that's why we separated them. Robert had both questions, but I think it's easier to talk about them separately because, honestly, the scenario you just asked about does raise questions about, well, how could that work, right? Could that require too much of the agency in terms of issuing advisory opinions about regs that are not yet there? This one, and I think the chairman's idea is a good one to start with 1D because it's a narrow, it's a more narrow set of examples. I think for both cross-state air pollution rule and MATS, for example, Cyrus, you probably have a fault line. You do for sure on Casper, and you probably have a fallback provision on mercury when it comes to a pollutant that's already regulated in some way, right? Greenhouse gases is really where this comes in. It comes in because of Robert's scenario. And let's just talk about current events. Clean power plan, the 111D rule, if somebody were to install something between now and when the courts strike that rule down, with a smile on my face, it would clearly tee up that question. Don't know anybody that fits into that category, but it certainly is something that might be helpful as a clarification in advance.
So just to reiterate, the rule was in effect, for better or worse, for some period of time.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and let's be clear. So your rule was finally passed. It had a compliance deadline, okay? You may have installed something in advance of that compliance deadline. That's and maybe we need to clarify that a little bit.
But it finally passed.
It is. It's a legal rule, and ultimately a court strikes it down. Clean power plan, I make that clarification about compliance deadline because, you know, strictly speaking, you don't actually have to meet the clean power plan until 2022, but the states are going to be developing plans.
And they do allow for early compliance, right? They say you can do stuff early. So,
And I don't know anybody who's in that situation because most people I know are just going to fight it very hard. And but there will be compliance contingency planning going on, and it would be good if we had some idea of how we deal with those types of applications.
Would you be open to, after environmental rule, putting in there parentheses or by commas, that was finally passed?
Yeah.
Is that clear?
Yeah. And I think the statute speaks in terms of promulgated. Is that right? I'm trying to remember.
My only concern is I just don't want D to start shading into issues of B where we might not all be in agreement. This one seems more narrow.
Yeah, for sure the rule that was finally passed or promulgated, depending on what the statute says. I think the statute says promulgated.
So a promulgated environmental rule? Or
I think finally,
or whatever it is,
finally promulgated is a great...
Finally promulgated. Temporarily finally promulgated.
You'd be amazed at what the EPA at least will do. Conditional, final, temporary emergency promulgations.
But promulgation doesn't mean somebody's dreamed it up and thought about it. Right.
Clearly, I interpret that part of the statute to mean that it was finally passed. I think most administrative lawyers would agree with that.
Do we want to draft some revisions at this point? Or what's the preference of the committee?
Other discussion, I'm going
to look up the statute. All right, I think I'll draft it in. I should have already had it in my Word document, and we can revise as we need to. Any comments from the phone? All right. You'll give us just a minute. Mike's looking up something, and I'm drafting something.
Mike, what's the difference between promulgated and formally proposed in C. I just don't know that is there a difference legally?
Good question. So the C language was intended to basically say that something came out either in a Federal Register or a Texas Register as a proposed rule, but not as a final rule. So the difference between C, that set of facts, and what D is intended to cover is you would have actually passed the period of time of a final rule publication. So it would have been finally, I mean, your term finally passed is what D's about. It's not a proposed rule, or it's not about the formality of it. It's the fact that you've actually got a final rule in regulatory.
So going back to the example of the Clean Power Plan, it hasn't actually been published, I believe, yet in the Federal Register.
That's right.
So it's not it wouldn't yet meet D.
Yeah, I mean, I think a conservative interpretation of the statute is that thing has to appear in the Register. Clearly, it has to appear in the Register in order for court documents to be filed, except for a few people who think otherwise. But it's not legally final until it hits the Register.
The version in the Register is the rule that applies.
Right.
So do we contemplate an environmental rule, comma, published in the Federal Register, comma? I guess it could be a state.
Yeah, I mean, it would. Rule too. I stayed away from it because it could be state, federal, or local.
True, yeah.
I mean, I think final promulgated rule is redundant, but maybe the kind of redundancy that's called for. But I'm looking.
So it would read a final promulgated environmental rule.
Is anything ever final?
Well, I mean, the term final rule is a term of art. It's not it is actually a legal issue, but final and unappealable is a different concept. I mean, going back to the organic statutory origin here, we just want to make sure that that our advice is consistent. You know, our advice to the commission is consistent with their statutory framework, right? So the statutory framework says promulgated. I mean, I'm pulling up this rule. Adopted. That's what it is. It's an adopted. I think that's the phrase we should use.
So a final adopted?
I don't even know if we need to say final, because adopted is final. And again, the statute doesn't say final, but that's what this means, is adopted rule. I mean, there's proposed rules and there's adopted rules. We use the phrase final, but that actually is the right legal term. It's adopted.
But it's not. It's not adopted until it is published, right? So, is the Clean Power Plan adopted yet?
It's signed, but you know, until the language that actually would be applicable is in the Register, it's not.
Okay.
I think the courts would say it's. I think the D.C. Circuit's about to say it's not adopted, and therefore it's not reviewable. If you file it for judicial review ahead of time. And Chairman, just for purposes of making sure we're lining up with the statute, we can just, if you look at 11.31B of the statute, the commission's direction relates to rules or regulations adopted by an Environmental Protection Agency of the United States, this state, or a political subdivision for the prevention, monitoring, control, or reduction of air, water, or land pollution. We could just copy that phrase into the end here when we say an environmental rule that the property was installed to meet or exceed is subsequently repaired or otherwise impacted such that the rule is no longer in place or no longer applies to a facility, and then we just add a qualifier at the end, but was at the time of the application adopted by, and then include the rest of the statute.
Okay. You threw in a lot more language there.
Yeah.
Adopted.
Or we could put that phrase at the very beginning.
Or reference 1131B.
Right. Even better.
You could just say an environmental rule, comma, adopted by an environmental agency, the state or political subdivision.
There you go.
Comma. Because that's your intent.
Okay.
It's not to.
Yeah.
It's to be the same time frame as B. It just got repealed at a later date. That's your goal, right?
Exactly.
Okay, Bennett, would you restate that, please?
You could say an environmental rule, comma, adopted by any environmental protection agency of the United States, this state, or a political subdivision of this state for the prevention, monitoring, control, or reduction of air, water, or land pollution, comma, that the property was installed to meet or exceed. So you're just interjecting the language from 1131B into the sentence.
Into a clause right before that, the property. And of course, when you crafted the recommendation, you just merge that intro clause in one, and we just strike the following situations and jump from to include an environmental rule. You know what I'm saying? Instead of doing a list, because we're not doing a list here, this is
right.
Kind of proposing it as a standalone recommendation.
Okay.
You just use the language in the clause at the beginning of one, and you'd strike the following situations and strike the letter D and just go immediately into an environmental rule. With Bennett's clause, the 11.31B reference right after a rule, and then continue on really as it is. Is there other changes that are necessary if we insert that clause at the front?
Okay, I think I'm following you. Just, I apologize.
Just a minute.
And I finally have 1131B open.
Okay, I was going to send it.
Yeah, right.
Copy
text.
I was going to copy it for you, but you have it there. You can just copy it. It's right there at the second to last sentence of 11.31B. I just copy from adopted to the period. You see that?
Oh, you just sent something to me?
No, I haven't sent
okay,
it, but that's the language. If you have it on your desktop, you can go ahead and just copy that text. It starts right after regulations where it says adopted by the second to last sentence.
Okay. So you're just taking adopted by
all the way to the period. Just take that text, copy it,
gotcha.
And
okay.
Plop it between two commas where Bennett was saying. That's a legal term, plop.
Plop. Yeah, all right.
But the key word subsequently requires that the repeal take place after the installation of the property. Is that correct? Is that the goal of this section? Mike?
Well, that's interesting that we haven't really addressed whether it's the installation or the application, right?
I mean, well, it says the property was installed.
Right. 2 meter exceed.
I think we're assuming that.
Are we assuming that the application is made goes through the process, they install it, and then it's the environmental rule is revoked.
And clearly, that's what subsequently means there, and that's all I'm looking to clarify. I mean, because Robert's scenario was that they actually did stuff, right?
They did
it. It's not
it,
a
right.
hypothetical. They did install it. Now, presumably, if they knew they didn't have to, they might not have, right? So they could mitigate the problem themselves.
Right.
Okay, Mike, now that I've plopped that in there, we're deleting. What are we deleting?
Well, you just delete the letter D and, you know, don't capitalize am. And then you'll use the lead-in of Section 1 of the recommendations. There's a clause at the beginning of 1.
Okay.
Just so it makes sense as a sentence.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's just speaking about it without an intro.
Right. Okay. We can work through this. I'm reluctant to take everybody's time right now, but
the general idea.
I can hand this to you, and you could revise.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, while he's cutting and pasting, can I ask a question? Does legal staff feel like this is something that can be clarified by rule? If we all agree to this, is this I assume this is not the way they currently interpret it. If the rule's repealed, your eligibility goes away. Is this in the realm of what they can recommend to the commission? Can they answer that?
I'll ask that of a TCQ staff. My impression is yes, based on prior discussion with when Rob was here, but I'll defer to him.
Good morning. Ron Olson, Environmental Law Division. Can you ask your question one more time?
If we all agree, if the various sides agree to this D, is that legal under the statute? Are we going to be okay making that recommendation?
Well, I think from the standpoint of making a recommendation, you can make any recommendation you like to the commission, and we'll review it as well as the commission, and they'll determine if that's something they want to do.
Okay.
So in other words, you'd have to take time to think about this before you'd have a recommendation.
Correct.
To the commission. Okay.
Put back the intro language from 1 at the beginning.
All right, this now reads, and I know it's hard for everyone, I wish we had a screen. The commission should clarify by rule or guidance document that the TCQ interprets the phrase wholly or partly to meet or exceed regulations or rules or regulations in the Texas Constitution and Section 1131 of the Texas Tax Code to exclude an environmental rule adopted by any environmental protection agency of the United States, this state, or political subdivision of this state for the prevention, monitoring, and so forth. So, Bennett, if you'd like to review this, if it'd give you a little more.
No, except, Bob, I heard you say exclude. Did you mean to say include? To include the following situation? I thought you said exclude.
If he said exclude, it's because I typed it that way, and okay. Boy, would that be a screw-up.
That wouldn't be.
To include an environmental rule.
I
yes,
heard.
Yes. Sorry, right. That's my slip. Okay.
Freudian slip? You were going to try.
Yeah, right, right. Okay, any other discussion? Would you like to read what I have on my screen just to make sure?
No, okay. You read it properly.
Okay.
Everybody get a chance when we do the minutes and you propose it as a letter if we vote on it.
Okay.
Look
sure.
at it again. We've had clarifications before if we need to.
All right. Any additional discussion?
Just
Mr. Kennedy.
One possible suggestion. It seems to me.
Why'd you get up here, if you would? Okay.
John Kennedy with the Texas Taxpayers Research Association. Seems what we're talking about here, you're worrying about.
Turn it on, John. Turn the.
On?
Yep.
You're worrying about characterizing the rule adopted, promulgated, or whatever, and it seems to me what the crux of the matter is whether something is required of the applicant. So it seems to me you could say an adopted rule with which the applicant, either at the time of installation or the time of application, is required to comply.
Okay.
And just tie the action of the applicant. Because I think that's what you're trying to key on, whether the applicant is forced to do something at the time of application or installation because of a rule, right? So you could just say a rule with which the applicant, however you want to put it, at the time of application or installation of the property must comply. Seems to me that would make it a lot simpler and cleaner. Just a suggestion.
Okay, thank you. Mike, Bennett, anyone else?
That's actually it's a good suggestion because, you know, in the abstract, our recommendation really wouldn't have an element that the actual rule applied to them. And so it fixes it from a standpoint of the commission would be presented with the recommendation and say, that's great, but how do I know this rule applied to that applicant? So it is a good suggestion.
Would there be some possible... I guess contention with the interpretation of required, what is required.
Well, the tricky thing, required makes me nervous because it's not in the
right the statute
or the Constitution. I'm comfortable. I like meet or exceed.
Yeah. I mean, you want to keep that language.
I agree.
Because we're not making big changes. All we're addressing is we're going along a normal application. Everything would have normally been granted, except now they just repeal the rule. That's all we're trying to accomplish. There's not any, right? We don't want to cut any new ground on
right
on motive or any of that sort of thing. It's
right.
Just King's X, you know, it got repealed. Now I'm stuck with this expensive piece of equipment that's taxable, and it shouldn't be. So
okay. I mean, it is true. The statute kind of leaves us with the phrase, is installed to meet or exceed, right? And that is a loaded phrase that, you know, nobody knows. I mean, at minimum, it's applicable to them. You know, does it imply an intent or a motive is going to be debated. But by using the statutory language, we are safe. I would agree with that. I see what John's trying to do is to make sure that the commission isn't concerned that we are eliminating the applicability requirement, right?
Right.
So I'm with Bennett in terms of wanting to keep was installed to meet or exceed. I mean, there is a nexus there, not enough of a linkage. I mean, I hear what John's saying, but if that equipment wasn't installed to meet or exceed that reg, right, then it's not eligible, and that's what how the statute works. So we don't really have to keep on reiterating that it's applicable to the applicant because that's automatic in that phrase.
Okay.
Michael, may
so
I
do ask, we have, go ahead.
Michael, may I ask a question of you, sir?
Yes, sir.
If what we're as I'm listening to what we've been talking about for, I guess, several meetings now, I'm the furthest thing in the world and don't care anything at all. Well, if I wanted to have a bar cart, I'd have one. Don't want one. But it appears to me that what we're talking about here is controlling law, the law that was in control at the time that the – and it's as simple to me as saying you shall receive the benefits that would have accrued to you you know, if you were complying with the law that was controlling at the time. Mm-hmm. And if the law goes away, that's fine, but you're still going to receive the benefits of the law that was controlling at the time that you made the application, bought the equipment, and installed it. Mm-hmm. Am I not seeing that correctly?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, what we did in the prior recommendation, Lloyd, was we talked, we actually had a rationale section, because that's, I think that would be an important thing to say in the rationale, because we're trying to, I mean, Ben and I are working hard to make sure this advice links up to the way the statute reads. I think that's the accurate thing to do. But in the rationale, I think we need to say something like what you're saying about making sure that, that the controlling law at the time of the application or installation is what is the test.
Wouldn't that take care of Robert and those guys, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Okay, for the record, Don Lee has joined our meeting at 10:40.
Sorry for being late.
It's all right. Any additional discussion?
No,
oh, yeah, okay. I'll bring it to you just a minute.
Something different.
This is the most valuable thing I want to do all day.
We added some clarifying language.
Basically, not using any of the subsections except.
Okay, but you're excluding the others?
Yeah, just to keep it.
Like we haven't discussed the others yet. We're trying to.
We started with 1D.
This was the easy one? This was the low-hanging fruit?
This is low-hanging fruit.
Any other discussion from the audience or from the phone or other committees as Don is trying to get to speed?
So does it mean if you got the exemption, didn't the law say if you got the exemption stays in place permanently no matter what happens to the regulatory structure?
Well,
that,
maybe not.
Are we repeating that, or are we saying that you can forever go in and get the exemption?
But no, because you have to put it in before the rule was repealed. You might do the application after.
All right,
the repeal.
So if I put in a piece of equipment to meet a rule in 2009, the rule exists, I put the equipment in, I don't file for an exemption, the rule gets repealed in 2012, I file for an exemption in 2013, I get the exemption. Is that?
I mean, I had said application or installation.
Do you have your mic on?
I'm sorry.
And again, you know, I do think kind of open it back up to Robert because he did tee up this fact situation the most important, so we might have to wait to get his thoughts about that question. I'm just envisioning the scenario that we're going to see here coming forward where you have carbon rules that will get proposed, get finalized, will be legally challenged, and so somebody will file an application, they'll be a final promulgated rule, adopted rule at that time, and either by the time they install or like simultaneous to installation or soon thereafter, it's invalidated, which depending on that timing might be that this isn't needed, or they actually file an application after installation, which happens, right? In fact, it might mm-hmm. happen more often,
right?
And that certainly is a situation that's a problem, right? Because you might have done it when it was adopted, filed your application when it was adopted, and then the commission's considering it when the thing's eliminated. And that actually has happened historically. It's just that the good news has been it's been on pollutants that had other fallbacks. So mercury was regulated under a regime that was proposed in the prior administration. That rule was vacated. But there was still a fallback mercury regulatory hook. So Cross-state air pollution rule, same thing. Right? Matt's probably the same thing. But carbon, whole new ball game. It won't. There won't be another regulatory hook that will have required an existing unit to install carbon reductions. So,
or an even more recent example, methane capture.
Methane capture in oil and gas, definitely. Once that, you know, that rule is finalized, there'll be a whole other slew of them on existing plants. This question may come up a lot.
Bennett, you mentioned that it's already been installed. I would envision, yes, thinking of some of the projects that I've worked on, not just environmental, but it has a long lead time. So you've committed the funds, and you're in the middle of construction. So it seems there needs to be some provision or some understanding that you're far along the path of doing it. It's not finally installed, but it will be.
That's tricky because you don't want to. I mean, the goal is to protect the builder, the person who's already sunk the cost. So, if the thing's installed, then the rule gets repealed. We give you the same tax break, but I don't know if you just started the plant, but you hadn't put the piece of equipment on yet. I don't know how it works. Can you give it back and get a refund on your equipment? Are you obligated to install something that serves no purpose? I'm not.
The law says acquired, too.
And the reason that I don't know why it says acquired, but the reason for at least the power industry that Paul and I represent is the big bucks are fronted when you buy that equipment. I mean, you get the hardware. It's, you know, depending on the project, it's 80 to 90% of the cost is already sunk by the time you make it, you know, you actually put it and attach it to your power plant. And these aren't like things you buy at Walmart. They're not exactly resellable. The acquisition of the property is the burdensome hit.
And I'll go back to Lloyd's comment, if I interpreted it right, is basically whatever the controlling law or regulation is at the time, that's what applies.
That makes sense to me. What is the situations here that we're trying to address? Do we have some applications that are going down?
Nothing pending. Nothing pending. I mean, this is something that I do envision will happen under a Clean Power Plan now that we have a final rule.
So you envision that there's going to be a bunch of stuff bought to comply with the Clean Power Plan. And then the Clean Power Plan is going to change like most big new stuff does. And maybe some of that equipment won't be strictly required in the future, and they won't already have got their exemption in place.
That's exactly it. And methane at an oil and gas site.
So my interpretation is it would meet at the time it's installed, and then it would exceed because it's no longer meeting, it's exceeding.
It's hard to exceed a measure that no longer exists.
Well, then that's the difficult issue that the commission is grappling, right? I don't think they have a bad record at all about making calls like this. They haven't been confronted with this call, strictly speaking, other than I think Robert's situation occurred in a setting where he got his just in time. They got their exemption right before the Supreme Court decision was made, but it might have been a different outcome in talking just informally with staff if they just don't have a clear understanding of what would have happened if that Supreme Court would have invalidated that rule before he got his application approved.
Or if Ron had been on vacation
exactly.
For a couple weeks.
Or not reminded him to respond to his questions. But. But, I mean, that's the... But for that very legitimate statement, you know, this might not be a debate, but it... You're talking about something that controlling law at the time was in place, but there's no rule left.
So in the laws that govern the regulatory authority that counties have, which is very little, it's usually around development, right? The the rules and the law that applies to an application is the is the law in place when it's filed. So it's not, this isn't foreign to us.
Right.
I wouldn't think. It kind of makes, and that makes sense to us. We kind of, we accept that, except certain times.
And Bennett, before you got here, Bennett made a good clarification of the difference between this question and that, which is reflected in one of the earlier subsections, which is a much more difficult question, which is the thing actually isn't final yet. And the reality is people do a lot of stuff like that in advance. And I'm not, I mean, we got to take these things in bite-sized bits. This one makes sense. That one's a harder call.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you on taking them in bite-sized bits, and this seems like a chewable bite.
Any other discussion?
Is there, I kind of saw Minor ready to make a comment a few minutes ago. Did you have a comment?
No. I'm just acknowledging the conversation.
Don, I asked staff if, even if we all agree to this, is there a chance that it's actually not legal under the statute? And they're not, don't sound prepared to know yet, so that we could make this recommendation. They'll have to go back and propose a rule, assuming they think it's okay to be sort of retroactive, what is what we're doing. Not retroactive, but...
That was one thing I was wondering. The start of language is the commission should clarify by rule or guidance document. And do we have a feel for... And I think maybe that language is because you had four different things. Now that we've narrowed this down to a bite size, do we know that this takes a rule change? Or can this be done through guidance?
I mean, the intent of that phrase really was to give the commission our, I guess, deference of however you want to handle it on this specific question. My answer would be that this doesn't require a rule change, but the commission may want clarity. I mean, that's something the commission legal staff can sort out and the commissioners themselves.
I take it from the body language that y'all have not actually encountered this situation yet ever. So you don't... Y'all haven't gone through the process of deciding where you are right now on this. Is that shaking your head saying, yeah, that's right. We don't really know where we are on this question because we've not encountered it. And we're not going to answer the, you're not going to answer the question as a hypothetical. Yeah, that makes sense.
It would be an advisory opinion. And we're an advisory committee.
That's right. And it's appropriate.
And it's really just a desire to get
out
in front of it.
Do you believe that it could be done just by guidance?
Well, I mean, it's an interpretation of the statute, right? And it's an eligibility decision, and I think the commission gets to – I don't think they've ever put a rule out that said no to this question, so it's not like they've misled anybody. They could just say
– Rulemaking's a big process, right? I mean, rulemaking's a big process, and it opens up everything really for more stuff, so I think if you believe this is consistent with the existing adopted rules.
Right.
I don't think it's inconsistent because there's an implied time connection that the moment you installed or bought the property, it was meeting something that was in place. It's not saying that we're trying to protect your taxability at the time you bought something that you would not have otherwise bought. The fact that it later changes is the statute doesn't exclude that.
Well, we could offer advice that it be clarified by guidance, unless they feel that's contrary to their rules. And if so, please let us know. We can ask very nicely. And I found them always to be willing to respond when you ask nicely, and then it either gets fixed. Or we find out that they feel they need a rule change. And if so, then we can come back and recommend a rule change, and they can either ignore us or, I'm not ignore us, but they can either agree or not.
Right. And, you know, this program has been run well using their application guidance document. This could just be something they'd layer into the application guidance.
I'm comfortable making that that advice, making that recommendation to them.
Are we ready to put that in the form of a motion?
I'll move.
All right. Just strike the rule.
Seems like you would just strike the language by rule or and just say the commission should clarify by guidance. Document that. I mean, we could still say rule or because they may, you know, we may not know. They might feel like they want to do it by rule. That's kind of why I put both. Just let them make that call if they decide to do anything at all.
How about this? The commission should clarify by guidance document, comma, if possible, or if not by rule.
Well, I was kind of wanting to come back and have that discussion about a rulemaking process.
Or if we prefer guidance, we can just simply flip that and say by guidance or rule, if that's our first preference.
And the reason that I wrote it that way is clearly if we all vote to, you know, issue that advice, we're comfortable with either option. So we've implicitly blessed it's okay to do it by guidance, and they can choose either one. And that's my idea there. I do think it is important because Lloyd raised a question, I think right when you walked in, that we don't have time, and it's probably not a good way to do it, is have the rationale explain a little bit of why we're doing this, and we can just, during when we take up the minutes of this and we try to put this into a letter, we all kind of craft by committee some language. I'll take a little bit of an excerpt of what's in this document, that last sentence, some of it doesn't apply to this, so I'm going to have to change it. And the tenets would be concept that controlling law at the time of application should generally govern, the concept that environmental rules are often contentious and could be invalidated subsequent to an application, something like that, and then use an example
am I
like
right
Roberts.
That you're not just looking at application time, you're looking at installation or acquisition time.
Yeah, and that's probably where the rubber hits the road on our consensus about that language.
That raises another question if I'm a plant and I acquire pollution control. I acquire pollution control property to go on my plant. I file for my exemption. I then sell the plant. I sell it to a new owner. Those exemptions have to come back through, right? Or am I wrong on that?
They have to refile.
And so how does that play into this? Again, getting to the point of I don't think you're looking at application time. I mean, we don't, or are we looking to say that a plant, are we looking to say that the, I guess what happens now, the law's changed and they refile right now, Ron?
Don, here's the way I would answer that. I think they should not get it. Because if before the sale the law was invalidated or repealed, then that piece of equipment's not going to have any market value that went into the sale, or shouldn't, right?
Yeah, I guess I think you're right. I think you could get 100% exemption all at once because it has zero value to exempt. What you're saying?
But that's getting into a valuation assumption.
Well,
which might.
If the equipment truly is
unnecessary
pollution control and the law that it was complying with is repealed, doesn't it have to have zero value?
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying it could easily be interpreted in one county versus another county because it's valuation.
Well,
do you see the question I'm getting to, Mike?
Let the new purchaser duke that out with the appraisal district? Because I think it, by definition, would have no value if there was no law in effect. It couldn't. There shouldn't be an exemption for something that has no value. I think you could get it reduced to zero by appeal. I don't know. But Don's right. This language we're agreeing to doesn't seem to apply in that case for reapplication, but I'm not sure I want to give it for the an application that's made after a sale. Because you're sure not going to pay nobody that's buying it would pay anything for that useless piece of equipment. Right?
I agree.
Any other comments?
Because right now, this language says subsequently.
Turn your mic, please.
Sorry. I mean, this language says subsequently repealed or otherwise impacted. So it is got to happen before the repeal.
And what we've ignored here, if there was never a sale, wouldn't over time, appraisers relook at this every year. If an environmental rule were repealed, wouldn't very shortly the appraised value of that piece of equipment drop to zero anyway? Wouldn't next year's appraisal ignore that equipment? Shouldn't it?
I'm just saying the real value might be different than the appraised value from the appraisal district. Your logic is right. But some are more aggressive than others. That's all I'm saying.
and it's not an easy. I mean, I only know a couple of areas of the industry really well, and I know enough to know I don't know anything about the rest, right? And so in the power industry, the equipment might have inherent value. It might. It might be taxable. We just can't make that assumption. These are big pieces of equipment with multi-$100 million price tags. It's hard to imagine. And it's also a sliding scale of compliance, Bennett. You might have something that exceeds a rule and gives you some regulatory certainty, but it's not fair to say you had to have it, right, to stay open. So, I mean, perfect example is an SNCR at a power plant. You put it in, you might operate it a little bit, you might operate it a lot more, and it's a lot more costly to operate it a lot more because of chemical costs. So, I mean, it's just the different world. It's not, I think it's a bad assumption to say that the value will drop precipitously with its need to comply. I just know, in the industries I'm aware of, it wouldn't be an easy answer, and I'm sure it's more complex when you think about others.
It could be repurposed so it has value, could be repurposed geographically, or even, you know, just utilization-wise, and that means it has market value, right?
Well, you're going through some logic, and it could be as simple as, and this is not disparaging, I'm going back to an actual example I'm thinking of where they said, do you spend a couple hundred million on this? I can't believe it's worth zero now.
Yeah.
It's just that.
It's at least got scrap value.
Yeah. Well, it costs money to remove it, too, so. All right. Mr. Kennedy has some more comments.
John Kennedy with the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. In this sort of an example, I promise you the appraisal firms will not give a hoot whether you're using it or not. They're not concerned about the use because they're not going to value this type of equipment on an income approach. So they don't care about use. What they will do will value this equipment on a cost minus depreciation. So they'll set a replacement cost, usually guided by what you paid for the equipment, and then apply a depreciation schedule to it. I promise you, whether you're using it or not makes no difference to them. The only thing that matters is you own it and what's the market value for that piece of property. And the taxpayer will go in and argue, well, it's not really worth $200 million because it can't sell it to anybody. Trust me, capital appraisal, Pritchard and Abbott, et cetera, that's a very hard sell because it's a hard, tangible asset that you paid big money for that you own. And they're required to put it on the roll at what they deem its market value, irregardless of whether you're using it or not. I just add that for what it's worth.
You know, if it's true, if it's just if it's pollution control equipment, John, if it's a scrubber,
it had, there's right. a market for that.
If it's a scrubber on top of a second, I don't care. I meant by care is I don't care ever about taxing it. Right? We agreed the pure pollution control stuff. So that stuff, I'm like, we ought to be able to at least address that stuff.
Yeah, but I was just addressing the question about the appraisal district would say it doesn't have any value. Yeah. That's not going to happen.
Right. You're saying that the exemption is needed because the appraisal district
will place a value on that
property. Place a value on it.
That's correct.
And my position is I don't mind that we get an exemption, right? From our public policy standpoint, the true pollution control equipment, and I say are the easily recognized as solely pollution control equipment, I got no problem. None of these issues make me think it ought to be taxed. The whole issue gets to the mixed stuff. And what is pollution control equipment in a results? What do you call it, Mike? The new type of regulations we're all doing, which are so results oriented and not
output based.
Yeah,
and emission
that's,
limits.
That's where all this real difficulty
right.
comes in.
That's an entirely different question. I just wanted to make clear that the appraisal districts will not put this property on at zero. If you still own it and possess it, even though you don't have to, quote-unquote, use it anymore, because they will deem that it has a market value that will be arrived at using whatever one of the three methods is most appropriate. And my guess is cost minus depreciation is what they will use. That's what they generally use to value these types of properties.
So what you're saying, John, is that it does need to remain an exemption and might ought to survive the sale to another company because even though it's still worthless from a pollution control perspective because the statute's no longer in place, the appraisal district will continue to put a value
yeah,
on it until
absolutely.
It depreciates.
They will put a value on it as long as you own it until it's depreciated to zero. Correct.
So it sounds like, unfortunately, Don has pointed out that the language we have now might not allow a reapplication in certain narrow cases where it ought to apply. Mike, do you want to go back to the drawing board and think of some better?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are issues associated with reapplication, and the intent of 1D is to take a more narrow cut. I mean, this advice is not by any means intended to, and we'll say this in the rationale, not say that the commission could take a broader view of eligibility. It's really just when you look at the set of facts that we project might occur, if somebody comes in, and I've subsequently told Bob, I think we, rather than just say installed, we really do need to use the statutory language because Paul's made the point. It says installed, acquired, used, or constructed, right? There's an intention there that all of those things are sufficient thresholds, right? I'm just looking for those guys out there that are going to be coming in to do stuff, whether it's methane rules or other GHG stuff, that they're going to have the peace of mind to know that even if this blatantly illegal rule gets pulled down off the books, they're not going to have, you know, put their career in jeopardy having suggested to be proactive. And
when's the next three-year, is it three-year rule review cycle?
When is that?
Next year.
Okay. So we're not, if they need a rule change to do something on this, they're not doing it this year. I wouldn't think
right.
they would. They're going to wait till next year and tee it up as an issue mm-hmm. in next year's revision process. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we've got other stuff to talk about, too. So, I mean, I'm not in any big hot hurry to get an approval. I'd rather have us get it right than get it done. So we can...
Our Donna, I would suggest, of course, we had advice in April, if they choose to put that in a rule change, then they could include something else in a rule change while they're going through the process.
Help me. I'm sorry, I didn't follow. They're going to do a rule change in April, you're saying?
Well, if they do. We had advice that we submitted in April about the carbon capture. It's we mentioned earlier that TCEQ has acknowledged it. They have not said if they're going to include it in a rule change or not. But I'm just saying it's out there. We already have advice out there that could affect a rule change.
Right. I just can't see them doing second half of 2015 rule change and coming around and teeing up another rule change process of 2016.
Right. We're pretty far along in the process at this point for 2015. You're right.
It's a pretty long, what's a six-month process to do a rule change?
That's the fastest.
That would be fast.
It's about
18 months. Yeah, because this isn't driven by, it's not driven by any pending application at all.
Right.
So I'm not in a big hurry. And strictly speaking, it's going to take 2 or 3 years to get resolution of some of these rules, legality. So this is going to be just as pressing and relevant and not too late to take up next year. It's good that we're having a conversation now because we can build to it. We can get some consensus language, go back and think about it some more. Definitely Robert, has other items on this subset list. That 1B item is something that I think he, wanted to talk some more about. So I'm open. I think we got close with this language. I think we need to dress it up a little bit more to marry with the statutory language. And I certainly support kind of a layman's explanation of it, to Lloyd's point, about the rationale. So there's a meeting of the minds about, and that the commissioners and the staff, when they look at this recommendation, they kind of see what we were thinking about, right? So that's true both with regard to the rationale and with regard to the example.
And so as you think about it, the question I kind of have for you on it is, are you trying to tie the exemption to the status of the regulations at the time that the property was acquired or when the application is made? I think you mean acquired.
I think that's
what you want.
I think based on the discussion and looking back at the statute, I think it needs to be all the things the statute says, acquired, installed, used, or constructed.
No, I'm using acquired to refer to all those things.
Yeah, okay.
So
that's the earliest point, right?
Yeah. And that has some significance, I think, then to this thing I never really had thought about before, which is what happens in an evolving regulatory landscape, what happens as properties change hands. And I don't know, on the big industry side, y'all don't seem to change hands as much as the commercials. I know, the hotels swap hotels. The hotelers swap hotels, every 3 or 4 years or something, for whatever reason. And so changing ownership is just the issue I started thinking about from this discussion.
I don't know if I agree with that. It occurs pretty, you see older gas plants getting bought by other utilities, not all the time, but quite a bit. I mean, it does happen. You see mergers.
I have very little knowledge on that, so I wasn't really trying to make an argument on it. I agree. So I accept yours.
Since I think it's a great question. I mean, I don't want to put Ron on the spot, but let's just brainstorm here. If somebody came back and filed an application on a property, different landowner. Different landowner is going to have to come in. Different property owner is going to have to come in. That we know. And they come in, and the original determination of eligibility was made based on the state of the law at that time and that applicant. Have you confronted that issue? I guess a safer question for you, to not put you on the spot, is have you confronted that issue yet in the program on a reapplication?
We've confronted that issue several times in the past. Hmm. There's a refinery in San Antonio that's changed hands 4 or 5 times in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, they filed for exemptions. We granted them. they went to file for them the next year, and then they changed hands. So they were never used. The use determinations were no longer valid because of that. In our opinion, it's what rules are in place at the time that you make your application. So that if we granted something in 1994 that, I can't think of a good example, paving. We used to do paving for stormwater control, and we no longer do paving for stormwater. It's only for air regulations. So if you bought a facility and you had paving that was exempt, when you came in and made the reapplication to us, it would only be those that paving that was there to meet an air regulation. So you would lose part of that exemption. But we would see the same thing if there was a rule change. If there was no longer a rule that required you to do anything, then it's not pollution control property under the law. But that person didn't acquire it, install it, any of that stuff for the purpose of pollution control. It was the previous owner who had done that.
Yeah. But the use hadn't changed.
Well, but we don't know that. If they were using it as pollution control and the new owner came in and purchased it and it's not being used, it's just sitting there idle because they're no longer required to use it, then it wouldn't be used as pollution control. We've seen that with a couple of paper mills, in fact, where as those have changed hands, the equipment that we've previously approved as pollution control is not being used by the new owner. So it's not pollution control if it's not being used to control, monitor, reduce air, water, land pollution.
Right.
But so if it's not eligible for
that reason. I mean, I get that for sure. What if the use hadn't changed? I mean, it's an extraordinary hypothetical question, but that the scenario, let's just play it out.
Let's use that cement example because that seems interesting, especially around the water. Mm-hmm. You said that you used to, like, if someone had cement, I don't know if that means a cement retention pond or a cement parking lot.
It would have been parking lots, driveways, curbs, anything that was put in place to direct the stormwater to the stormwater pond.
Right. So I need to put a stormwater pond in. I did cement instead of dirt or caliche or whatever, right? In order to comply with stormwater rules. Stormwater rules changed. The cement's still sitting there doing the same thing it did before. Right?
But your change didn't happen because the stormwater rules changed. You guys just changed your position that, you know, that really isn't pollution control. Right. I mean, that was a
correct
commission decision,
right?
You know, and we're not debating that. That's
okay.
I thought that the actual
stormwater rules changed.
In the cement case, there are multiple reasons for paving your roads and your parking lot. At the bottom of your list is to control stormwater.
Right. So you just made it a different call.
Okay.
Right.
I'm sorry. I thought the stormwater rules had changed, and I thought that was a good example.
See, because that would be a legitimate. If the commission has changed policies or practices for, you know, its own reasons, it runs the program. It can evaluate this anew every time an application comes in. That seems like perfectly legitimate, sound agency practice. The harder question is what, I mean, and that this 1D language is explicit about, we're talking about administrative or judicial actions that invalidate the actual rule itself, right? So, or change its applicability. So it is the real interesting hypothetical that we might not be able to grapple with in an agreed resolution is what if somebody reapplied and between that time and the new application, use had not changed. They were still using it for the exact same purpose. It was still having the same benefit, but the rule itself had been invalidated. You know, we may not come to consensus about that set of facts because the use hadn't changed, and, you know, the equities would be in favor of doing it. But, you know, I'd much rather have us come to agreement about the thing that seems like an easy call, which is the applicant that actually got, you know, that was going in to do it and the reg was requiring it and they were getting out in front and they did it and then lo and behold the reg's gone.
And they haven't gotten their exemption.
Yeah, either it hasn't been issued or they hadn't quite got the application in, or I mean that what is the triggering effect, acquisition? That's something we all are gonna need to talk about. Obviously the commission will make its own decision, but that set of facts is a little bit easier to get your head around than the reapplication. I mean, I acknowledge that for sure.
I am leaning towards thinking they ought to try to address those issues if they can through guidance. Since you start writing rules around these sort of details, you could be writing rules till the cows come home, thinking of different certain little circumstances, and you're thinking of them in the absence of them actually being in front of you.
Right.
Okay, as of now, I've only changed one small thing in our original draft, which was to add used, constructed, or acquired to installed. Any other comments? Do we want to continue with this? Do we need to table it to refine it?
I mean, my proposal would be that we table it and that we get that language all crafted, because I think the rationale is almost as important as the language, making sure we all have meeting of the minds, and that we work between now and our next meeting on some draft language about rationale, and then Robert gets a chance to weigh in on his example.
I'll withdraw my motion and stand prepared to second your motion on that.
Okay. So I'll move to table with the intent of coming up with a draft rationale and final language that everybody can support by the next time we meet.
All right.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to table item 1D, and with the intent to come back with a more refined proposal and rationale. I don't know if that's good enough. All right, any discussion before we vote? All right, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed,
aye.
No.
Aye.
All right, motion carries. All right, we've dispensed with 1D for the moment. We have 1B and C on the, I'm indifferent of which one we take, which one in order.
What happened to A? Did we already pass that, or did we just strike that for now? I can't remember.
I asked Bob to strike it because it's open-ended, and we, you know, in our discussion last time, we realized there were some unforeseen, unintended consequences of how it could be. I mean, it's an issue that we need to confront, but relative to the other low-hanging fruit, it's a lot more difficult to craft a set of language like that that's tight. So it seemed to be creating an uncomfortable feeling in people's stomachs, so I propose that we kind of permanently pull it down until we figure out a way to write it better. And B and C are different. They're more specific, but they're closer calls, and I defer to the will of everybody about when to take those up. I'm not going to discuss them today.
Okay. All right, if there's no preference, we can talk about B for as little or as much as you want.
Is there an example that's tied to B? Are they any examples?
Three, maybe?
Well, NSPS rules apply. The applicability date is when it's proposed. Now, you don't know what the final rule is going to be, but...
So is that
you're taking
three?
An action on or after the date of proposal, that rule is going to apply to you consistent with whatever the final rule is.
So it's example three? Is that?
Yeah, only in the weird world of Clean Air Act laws can you have an applicability date that's before the final rule. But once that NSPS rule is finalized, its applicability date is
so
back at the proposal.
If you put in equipment because there's a pending rule and you believe you're going to need to do it, you're going to get out ahead and be proactive, and the rule never goes into place, or if the rule does, don't you just apply once the rule goes into place, and now you've got something
I mean, that would be a solution for most situations. The, you know, I don't know what exactly was driving Robert. I know Paul has thought about this one as well, but it's conceivable that, getting back to this whole acquisition point, you make a call to do it, okay, and you want to get certainty that you're going to get an exemption. You know, the economics of deciding to do it factor in whether or not you're going to get an exemption. You may not choose to buy that widget if you knew you were paying taxes on it.
Does TCEQ give determinations for proposed property? Behind you, Ron's answering.
Yeah. There has to be some action in the purchase or installation of the property before we would grant the exemption or issue the determination.
So the answer then, I think, is no. And I'm struggling a little bit with that.
But does B recognize that the rule does finally get adopted? This is not a case of where you bought it, where it was pending, and then it got dropped.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of like a hybrid. This is more, you just bought it ahead of time, the rule ultimately goes into effect. Is that correct? Am I reading that right?
Yes. I mean, the way I've always read it, and some of this had to do with Robert's example of installing something to be below a permit threshold, too. I mean, there's a couple of different scenarios built in to be there. I mean, there's two very distinct scenarios if you think about it. One is it's been duly adopted, right? And what you do keeps you from having to do something in it. In other words, not triggering the threshold, Robert's point. C is different. C is more of this proactive before it has to application.
So on the issue, I'm trying to get my arms around, separate this up into like the questions and where do I think we fall on them. And the question about, can I get something declared or determined to be pollution control and thus have the exemption because I put it in to comply with a proposed rule that is not yet final, I think that has to be no. I think the statute requires it to be no, and I think there's good public policy reasons for it to be no.
But doesn't Beef suppose that it's already been finally adopted, it's just the acquisition took place before it was finally adopted?
That's not a problem.
Well, when you say B, I mean, I think the fact scenario that Don is laying out is a C scenario. I mean, the way I've always separated these two,
yeah.
I think C is a much harder call. I mean, it is clearly an advisory opinion type thing. All right.
Fair enough.
And so, one of the reasons I defer.
So B is about buying a scrubber before a scrubber is required and then a scrubber is required?
Well, it's about two different scenarios. Robert scenario was you buy a piece of equipment that literally keeps you from triggering a permitting threshold. Right. So that's a different fact. You got a final rule.
But there's a rule in place,
right,
that regulates
that stuff. But it doesn't actually
apply to you because you put stuff in.
That fact situation is a different one than
how does staff analyze that? Is that a situation you're encountering?
It's not a situation that we've encountered yet, but it's a situation that people have talked to us about.
And part of my reason for deferring that decision, just to be real clear, is there are some conversations going on. Commission might be getting its arms around how to deal with that one way or the other, and I just don't want us to get in the middle of something that they're currently thinking about.
Well, then let's make sure we separate, because those are just two completely distinct issues. One seems real simple, and that is rules proposed, but but not final. You go buy the scrubber, rule gets finalized, then you apply for that exemption.
Right.
And you probably ought to get it because...
as long as it's a scrubber.
As long as it's a scrubber. As long as the rule finally went into effect, that seems like a no-brainer to me. Right. The other one is a totally different issue of I never got above the threshold.
Right, right. There are two things built out, and I do think moving forward, when we take these things back up, we should take those things up as separate items. We might all decide to pull all these stuff back together, but they are different fact situations. One is getting out in front of a compliance deadline, right? The other one's netting out or staying under a trigger. And then obviously C is an advisory opinion type thing. I mean, C is... you know, not nearly as much a priority in my mind as the others, because that asks the commission to do something it doesn't currently do or want to do. I think is a fair way of saying it.
You and I,
the other ones are really good questions of first impression.
If C qualifies you for an exemption, we'll open up a whole new lobby business getting bills filed that propose environmental regulations for all sorts of productive stuff. And then we'll get the applications approved.
Well,
while that bill is pending in front of the legislature.
But look at the language. I mean, the language never proposed for that to be effective. I mean, the exemption wouldn't be effective until the rule was effective. I mean, it's an advisory opinion. I mean, I recognize the Constitution is the Constitution, and it would be unconstitutional to have that.
All right. Well, I keep trying to glom onto the easy target.
Yeah. When this issue got talked about in the circles of the group here, and I took the short straw to try to draw something around that, I immediately put in this piece about how even if we decided to recommend that, we'd need to make it clear that it couldn't actually be effective until the rule was.
So C is really just a slight extension of the easy part of B, which is mm-hmm. you get to do the application before the rule's final, and then it's withheld until the finality.
Yeah.
B little one is just you still don't get the exemption until after the final rule. It's just you bought it slightly before the rule went into effect.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yeah. That's right. One's kind of proactive, and the other one's just asking for advisory opinions. And because C is not something that agency probably is all that excited about taking on.
I don't have any work right now, as far as I've heard from Ron. They said no application.
Yeah. If they had nothing to do, C would be something.
He's not laughing.
and just so everybody knows, I mean, that's for big stuff, for big ticket items, getting advisory opinions, pretty interesting for industry. I mean, that getting clarity, regulatory clarity of any kind, especially as we start to enter these weird world of movement ahead of us, is something that I have heard some interest in. That's why it's definitely out there. But if we knock off some of these other things, some of the applicability questions that people would actually be seeking advice on are actually going to get resolved. You know, the idea of proactive installation, the idea of a reg that might subsequently be invalidated, the idea of a netting out or a permit threshold. I mean, we resolve those types of questions and the need for advisory opinion starts to fall off, I think.
I think that the first part of B is something I could easily live with, but interestingly, I actually think it has a little more trouble under the statute in that the rule wasn't in effect when you bought or acquired it. But to me, that doesn't, from a policy point of view, since you don't get it until after the rule goes into effect, it doesn't bother me. You might have a little more statutory problem down the road.
It wouldn't make sense to say that someone who bought the property from you can get the exemption, but you can't, right? You put the scrubber in, but the rule's not in effect yet.
But you sell it to somebody, now he gets it?
Yeah. I mean, that's not a happy outcome, is it?
No.
Depends on how much you paid for it.
Any other discussion? Sounds like no action on B or C that we're suggesting.
I think when you bring this back, we ought to separate out the two parts of B because I think they're different, and we can think about them differently. because one part seems commonsensical, the other one's going to be very controversial.
Agreed.
Okay. These are difficult. I was thinking about the methane rules for oil and gas may require oil and gas to invest in leak detection equipment, which I think is a good thing to do, and I'm supportive of. So if a company, I know some companies already do this, if they've invested in leak detection equipment to look, infrared cameras to look for leaks to make sure they're not losing methane, should they, what if they were to apply now and say this is pollution control equipment and there's a proposed rule out there that would require us to have this equipment? Well, it's not final yet. I guess once it's final, but they've invested in it in the past, you know, that's kind of a quandary. So somebody who didn't do the right thing and hasn't done leak detection for years and years, they actually get a tax advantage by waiting until the rule is final.
And that's, you know, that a lot, I'd say uniformly, if you look at all the complexities and applicability, eligibility controversies or things we're trying to avoid, but these types of ideas, they really are trying to get at the heart of not punishing the early actor, right? Not creating a disadvantage to the guy who moved fast. I'm trying to give them clarity ahead of time. You know, it may not be that we can resolve all those issues, but they're motivated by very similar set of facts, Cyrus. It's generally the early movers that are, you know, getting cut by the edge of the envelope they're pushing.
And sometimes really short time frames.
Right.
On regulations that will become final in the not-too-distant future.
But in every instance of these examples, it's generally the people that are filing. So I think the idea of worrying about reapplication, I think we can remove, to make it easier to talk about, I think it is good to talk about just, let's talk about the applicants. Let's talk about the guys and gals that are actually doing the installation, the acquisition, and the application, not try to resolve the whole future. I think we go baby steps.
Where is example five? Where does that line up in terms of A, B, C, and D? Or is that just sort of a something we haven't dealt with? This is the non-source specific. Does that line up with any of those examples, or that's a whole separate new one?
Well, to a certain extent, it might have lined up with two, but it is a different and more generic question.
Oh, two, okay.
And, you know, what I did, I think the promise was we'd collect examples. Everybody kind of threw examples at us, and I didn't tie them to anyone because a couple of these examples actually seemed to invoke two different issues, but there wasn't any direct marrying up there, Cyrus. I think the examples that we would want to flesh out and the rationale we want to flesh out with the easier part of B and then D probably will be much more specific and not include five. And so as we proceed on our prior motion with D, I may engage Robert to see if he wants to speak to a re-articulation of B, but
okay.
My primary motive will be to get D nailed down.
Okay. Sounds like we probably don't need a motion for our B and C on this. We'll just continue to work on those. Okay. Unless you want a motion. I don't want to discourage you from that. All right. Any additional discussion on this item? Anything else on item four? One last time. All right, then we'll move on to five, old business. Any old business we need to discuss? Any new business?
Just remind me of the timing. TCEQ does an annual report. Is that at the beginning of the new year or at the end of the existing year? When does that occur? Sort of annual.
It's under review right now. It should be posted by the end of September.
So having that on a future agenda item, just to you know, so we can ask questions about it or whatever might be useful.
All right. Okay. Any other new business? Any general comments? One last chance from the audience. Anyone else on the phone? Don't want to cut anyone off. All right. With that in mind, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We have a motion to adjourn in a second. Those in favor, any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. We are adjourned at 11:40. Thank you.
Where they can, maybe?
No, sir.